Hello and welcome to Sox Talk on the Air, the official podcast of SoxTalk.com. I'm Marius Cleese coming to you from Chicago, and way west is Jason Gage once again. What is up, Jason?
What's up, Mario? Not much. It's just good to be back another week. Another week in first place. Quickly, we're going to run down the topics we're going to talk about today. We have, obviously, our 8-game winning streak. We went 7-0 last week. And our winners of 12 of the last 13. We are going to talk about Kansas City Royals, who we swept last week. The Minnesota Twins, who we swept last week. We're going to talk a little bit about the Twins pitching staff. We're going to talk about Mark Burley. We're going to talk about Jose Contreras. Then we're going to take a little break.
To clarify what you said first place. That is correct. But you could go even further and say that they currently have the best record in baseball.
Ooh, I didn't realize that. And you know what's kind of cool? I have the paper in front of me here. The Houston Astros have the best record tied with us. Two teams have met up in the World Series.
That's interesting and surprising because I didn't think the Astros would have that type of record. But I've been wrong before.
Well, we know that, and we're going to discuss that when it comes to Scott Pesednik later on in this segment.
Well, they have an 8-game winning streak going on right now. They've been on fire. They started off the season 1-4. Now they're 12-5. Clearly one of the top teams going in. They swept the Kansas City Royals to start the week. And I can't help but feel really, really bad for them. Do you feel bad for the Royals?
I don't feel bad for the Royals. I feel bad for the fans of the Royals.
Because, see, but when we were talking before the season, you know, I didn't think this team was a bad team. I thought they were going to be pretty competitive, and I think they will. I think right now they're just playing really bad. The problem is that even when they start playing good, and obviously they just beat the Indians in a 3-game set, which we'll talk about later on, but even when they start playing good, they're still going to have to be in this division and playing teams like the Sox and playing teams like the Indians. So even when they start playing good, they're going to be getting beat.
Like I told you, you were wrong in our prediction show or when you told me that the Royals are a much improved team. They made a lot of changes, but you and Hawk Harrelson are going to be dead wrong. This team is not going to win 20 more games than they won last year. They're a bad baseball team.
20 games. I thought they were going to be more competitive.
They're not going to be. How can you be competitive when you have an ERA over 6? It's not going to happen, and I don't see it falling too much lower. They don't have anyone to pitch. Their young prospects have never developed. This is just a bad organization, and I feel for the fans. I'm not going to shed a tear for the fans, but they did get their new stadium deal, you know, in the work. They're not stadium. They're going to get renovation money. They passed that whole legislation. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And speaking of stadiums, just because it's on my mind, and I don't like to give pubs out this quick to websites, but if you are a fan of Mario, I don't know why you are, you got to check out his latest podcast with the Mario and Jeff Show on 360thepitch.com. They have a great interview with a guy from, I think he's a writer from Baseball Prospectus.
Yes, he's a Baseball Prospectus writer, Neil DeMoss. He was a co-author in Baseball Between the Numbers. I don't know if any of the Sox Talk listeners have ever heard that book or read that book, but it's Baseball Between the Numbers. It's a Baseball Prospectus book. We had him on the show. He was one of the co-authors. He wrote a chapter on it, and he talked about stadiums and just how
they're not economic, how they don't really renovate the city. I wish I was on your show because you guys were talking about how the stadiums really don't have an effect on the impact in the surrounding area. But all I got to point out, and you've been there, is San Diego and how that whole downtown region has been truly rebuilt. And the large reason for that is because they influxed all that government money and city money into the Padres' new facility, which is just a beautiful park, and they're building all the lofts right around the stadium. You have the convention center right there in downtown, and they've truly turned that whole area around. 5 to 10 years ago, it was just a junk hole. It was horrible.
And you know what Neil was saying in the interview? That's a lot of that stuff's up for debate. I think he brought up an example in Denver. I think with the Broncos stadium, you know, a lot of people were saying, "Oh, because of the stadium, that area was developing." He said, but then other people were saying that area was going to develop anyway. So it's always really hard to tell if a stadium is really the cause for you know, a particular area to have a little boom. But that's not Sox related.
There's no
stadium deals going here with the Sox.
It was a good little 15-minute segment on your guys' show that I enjoyed.
I did enjoy it. It was a great interview.
So Kansas City, as bad as we can feel for them, at least they're going to have that stadium money coming in. And who knows? Maybe they can make something happen. And maybe they can get some good prospects, like we said, for some of the guys they signed, like Reggie Sanders and Mark Grisolano.
And yeah, and that's, I think, why I like their offseason. Even though guys like Sanders and you know, guys like Grisolanic and even bringing back a Greffin, you know, these guys aren't going to make the team great, but it'll make them a little bit more competitive. And then that trade deadline, those guys could be some decent, you know, could come bring you some decent players, decent young players in return when you have that trade. Blah.
those are great sound effects, Mario.
Yes.
But with stadiums, it's funny, actually. The Kansas City Royals, the two teams we played, and the Minnesota Twins this past week, are dealing with stadium issues. Kansas City got theirs resolved, and now Minnesota's trying to get their own stadium. And they were swept by our Sox this past week. It was a great series. And the best part about this series was from one of my favorite players in the game. I know you were not much of a fan of him. And that's Torrey Hunter of the Minnesota Twins, center fielder, Gold Glover. Shouldn't have won the Gold Glove last year. That should have belonged to Aaron Rowan.
Gold Glove, but that's a whole other debate. Who is not that good.
Well, like I said, that's where Brian Anderson, our own center fielder's upside lies, is he could be the next Torrey Hunter. Mediocre offensively with some pop in the bat and fantastic defense. But the thing I like about Torrey Hunter is what he says. What's on his mind, he says. He doesn't BS you. Earlier this baseball season, they were asking about Barry Bonds, and he pretty much was a straight shooter on it. And then on Friday, he made some comments about the Chicago White Sox, saying they're not as good of a team as they were last year, and, you know, yada yada, they're not the best team out there. But then Sunday morning, after the Sox took two games from them, including a victory over Johan Santana, which we'll discuss in a couple moments, Torrey Hunter pretty much took a complete 180. And he said how, after seeing them in person, this is the team to beat in baseball. This team is damn good. I have some quote right here from him. We already knew they upgraded that whole team, close to $100 million payroll, and it really showed this weekend. So Hunter's been impressed. I think everyone in baseball right now is impressed. And as the White Sox have emerged from this 1-4 slump, White Sox fans should be real excited. We still have our weaknesses. We still have some holes to work out, but this team is starting to gel. It's starting to get on that roll. And as we started the season, we were coming off a lousy spring, and the chemistry wasn't quite there yet. The team wasn't really clicking on all cylinders.
Had that
but this past
start.
Week, yeah, and our offense carried us early on. But now our pitching has started to really, really come through. And it's that pitching that's going to be separating us from the rest of the division. And we're going to really get in depth on that later on when we talk about the Twins and Indians rotations. And one good thing that came out of this sweep for the Minnesota Twins perspective was Johan Santana. He's a Sox killer, and somehow he's 0-2 this season with an ERA over 5 to when he was facing the White Sox on Friday. But he brought his A game, and he found his grip for his changeup or his delivery, because his changeup had been basically his best pitch, but this season it wasn't working. And he was fooling everyone on the Sox except Jim Thome, who hit a huge home run and gave us a 2-1 lead. And we kind of rubbed that in the eighth inning by beating up the Twins' bullpen. So not only did we beat Santana, we actually beat up on the Twins' bullpen, and that just never happens.
That was a surprising thing.
Aside from Santana, Minnesota Twins fans have to be concerned, because as much as they improved their offense with adding Luis Castillo, and they have a healthy Torrey Hunter back,
well, the thing
and
is,
obviously they
get,
signed Rondale White to their DH spot.
They got to get Stewart and Castillo back in that lineup. And Castillo, I think he's out with a knee injury, and Stewart, I believe he's having
his wife was having kids.
Yeah. Kids.
Or a kid.
How many kids? Yeah, so I mean, offensively, I think they'll be okay. In the rotation, if Santana figures it out, you know, Carlos Silva is not a bad pitcher. He just, I think Uribe is now 10 for 20 against him lifetime.
Oof, yes, Juan was good on Sunday with his two home run performance.
But Silva's a decent pitcher. Radke's always been a decent pitcher. I'm not even sure how, to be honest, I have no idea how Liriano has fared so far.
Liriano has been fantastic. He gave up his first run just recently, but he's pitching out of the bullpen. Right now, the Minnesota Twins' team ERA is 6.1. That puts them three behind in the two worst teams. So they're 28th, I think, in the league, or 29th in the league in pitching with a 6.1 team ERA, and the Kansas City Royals have the worst pitching staff, and it's 6.12.
Yeah.
So, obviously, they're not far off from being the dead worst. And it's hard to imagine that, because Brad Radke's actually pitched pretty solid, although He did get hit around a bit. And then you have Johan Santana, who, even though his ERA is high, we know he's going to finish the season as a Cy Young Award candidate. Then they've had Baker, who's pitched actually pretty well, the young kid. But their problem has been Carlos Silva hasn't quite been as good as they'd hope, but he's a consistent pitcher. He doesn't walk guys. And he's a solid fourth or fifth. But Kyle Loesch, they've really stuck by, has an ERA over in the double digits. I think it's 11-something.
Yeah, I think it's really time to kind of
bring Francisco Liriano into that rotation. That's what they got to do. But as bad as this pitching staff is, my take on the Twins pitching staff is this ERA is going to come down.
Yeah.
They still have some good arms in that bullpen that have struggled as well. Crane has not been good, and their bullpen has really struggled.
Yeah.
But this is the Twins. They got a lot of good young pitching down in the minors. They've had Boof Bosner, who's really been doing good down there in AAA. And basically put, this Twins pitching staff is going to get better. Yeah. And
The rotation's going to get better. The bullpen's going to get better. And then offense, it's not a great offense, but I think once they get everybody in that lineup and they kind of start gelling a little bit, I think the offense will improve a lot too. So
they're going to be gelling. Are you gelling?
Oh, God, don't even bring
that's
up
that. That's the stupidest commercial ever, is it not?
I did not mean to tie into that at all. At all.
I hate bad commercials.
They got their point across because
I know it was for Scholes.
Unless there's animals like monkeys in there, because monkeys are always funny to watch in commercials.
Man. I'm just going to report you to the NAACP.
What?
I don't know.
Okay, well, speaking of that pitching duel with Santana, Burley was on the other half of it and had another great start. Great start. I think his ERA is now under 2. He's got 3 wins. But still, there's always that contract talk now. You know,
yeah.
Him possibly going to St. Louis or wanting to go in St. Louis, and Williams had some words for it. What exactly is going on there? Because I really didn't really catch this whole situation like you did.
Well, to start it back, it was probably a week ago when Mark Burley was asked, and somehow he mentioned the fact that he knows he said the whole St. Louis thing and how he grew up there. He's a fan of St. Louis, and he would love to play with St. Louis before he quit. But then he also made a point that he's heard from other people how it's really not that great playing in front of your hometown because you have all that added pressure and it's real difficult. And he said that if the White Sox made the exact same offer the St. Louis Cardinals did, he would probably be back in Chicago and he'd be more than happy to finish his career here. This really became a home to him. And while it's not the Cardinals' his dream team growing up, he really has found a fit here in Chicago. The fans love him. And what can you say? The city's taken to him. Fan favorite. I'm going to say that for the third time now. But Ken Williams responded to this. Don't ask me why Ken Williams responded, but I think his ego has grown a little bit. And Ken Williams was always an egotistical guy. I love him as a GM, but I think his ego has grown a bit because he seems to be getting more mouthy than usual. And I'm not a fan of our GM going out and just taking things to the media. I prefer you to shut up and give Mark Burley a call if you're that offended by it and talk to him man to man. But Ken Williams just said he's sick about here in St. Louis in regards to Burley, and it's really affecting things. But you know what? Ken Williams needs to shut up because
I don't
Mark
recall
Burley
him
is our best pitcher.
I recall him saying that after somebody says it, you know, 3-4 times, you have to start taking it seriously.
That's exactly what he said. But you know what? The only thing
I could see where he's coming from in that. I mean, Burley is still a year away from his contract year. Any questions that are brought out to him, he should just be ignoring. He shouldn't be getting into these discussions because, you know, if it was his free agent year, okay. But you got 2 years left, and you got a regular season that you're in that you have to worry about. All this other questions about going to the Cardinals, he should just say, I don't want to talk about it.
I think for the most part he hasn't talked about it. And what he said in reference to the Cardinals this past time was the fact that they're not the front runners to get him. Chicago. All they have to do is make a similar offer, and he's staying in Chicago.
But why is he bringing it up? Why is he even answering the question? That's what I'm wondering.
Because it's been an issue that's been brought up numerous times, and so many people get offended by the fact that he wants to play with this, you know, the team he loved as a child. Big whoop. This guy loves playing the game. and he loves playing in Chicago, and Ken Williams needs to stop trying to
I'm not arguing
put
that.
A rift in between this.
I'm not arguing
and spinning
that.
PR, and we need to start thinking about potentially negotiating a contract. I'm going to finish my sentence.
Hold on. But just as easily as you're saying this, Kenny Williams has to shut his mouth, I think Burley has to shut his mouth too, because once again, whether he's been joking or not, he said it three times. And I'm not saying that he wants to go to St. Louis. I really don't care. To be honest, I don't care. All I'm saying is that if the question is brought up to him, he should just ignore it for now, because every time he brings it up, it's another story, and eventually you're going to get Williams pissed, and I have no problem with it. I have no problem with Williams saying whatever he's got to say, because it's a situation that should not be brought up, because he is still 2 years away. He's not a free agent at the end of this year. This is the regular season. He should be worried about this stuff, and nobody should be bringing up these questions, and if somebody does bring it up, he should ignore it.
Wow, that was a nice rant, but it's not going to erase the fact that you're wrong. No. This is PTI. I'm giving you negative points. If this was not PTI, around the horn, I'd put the mute button on you. Horrible. Horrible argument. I don't care what Ken Williams thinks. I really don't.
But what Burley thinks.
Mark Burley's the guy that's winning games for us. Mark Burley's the guy that's one of the best pitchers in baseball, one of the winningest pitchers in baseball since he's entered the league.
I'm not arguing that.
He said what? St. Louis, two times prior to this, in his 6 years in the bigs?
He actually said it
six,
times.
7 years?
I believe
this was his third time. This was his third time.
Okay.
So three times, and his third time, it was not about going to St. Louis. It was rather detracting all those people that keep telling him he's going to St. Louis. And he kind of set the argument straight once and for all that he's not going to St. Louis. If Chicago makes him a fair offer, he's staying right
first
here.
First of all, I believe this
so
is
he was shutting that all up.
First of all, I believe, and I may be wrong, and if I'm wrong, you could bring it up on next show and you could kind of just throw it in my face, okay, if you have some good proof for it. But I believe this is the fourth time he brought St. Louis up. This is also the first time that he said he just wanted to clear the area, okay? But this he's done it three times before. All I'm saying is that if anybody asks him questions about the Cardinals, he should just say, I don't want to talk about it. I have my business of this year. I'm still signed with this team until next year. And then that's it. Don't give, if the Sox, they do the same offer, and just forget about it. If anything, just say, I'd like to stay over here, whatever. But don't get into the whole details of, if the Cardinals offer me $10 million and the Sox offer me $10 million, well, I'm going to stay with the Sox. Don't get into that.
I could see where you're coming from, but the thing is, this quote ends it. If he responds now after this, then I have an issue.
Okay,
you need to be quiet.
But this was kind of one of those things that gave closure
to the situation. And why Ken Williams had to respond after he gave closure to the situation, I really don't know. If he had once again said, St. Louis, I'm going to go there, then I could see Ken Williams being upset. But Burley's comments were something that was going to give closure to this whole situation, and maybe it wasn't going to come up ever again. But instead, Williams has to kind of stick in and always get that final word.
That's what I've learned about Ken Williams. I want to find out what Williams said exactly, because it might have been before. What he said might have been before actually Burley responded with.
You could be right. The media sometimes has quotes from earlier.
And if Williams did say that, then I think both people are right. Because if Williams brought it up saying, what he said it three times before, he's probably serious. And then Burley comes back and says, as long as the Sox offer me, then it's open. Because then it's pretty much just the media started, and I think Williams and Burley handle it right. But I don't know. I think we just have to get it straight as far as who said what when. And then we can kind of get on with the story. But let's just get on with the show.
Whoa. That's not the media's job to be correct with who said what, where, when. Come on. We're all about controversy here. But speaking of Mark Burley, I want to take this to another point, and this is just about his contract. We have a $9.5 million team option on him for next season, and that's going to be really going to be a bargain. But if he becomes a free agent, should we start worrying about signing him to an extension now? Should we wait to this off season, or should we just try to negotiate with him in season next year? Or is it one of those cases where we just let him walk?
At the earliest, in the off season. I think you could work on contract extensions when the guy is about to be a free agent, or if maybe you sign a guy to maybe a long term deal before. And how much will Burley be making next year?
$9.5 million.
Now, if it was a situation where Burley was, let's say, making $6 million or $5 million, and you want to rework the contract to include next year and the year after, I'm perfectly fine with that. But he's been making $9.5 million next year. I would wait to the off season, deal with him then, or deal with him during next season. But don't even bring it up right now. I don't think that should even be a problem, because once again, he signed through 2007.
There's just one issue I have with waiting till this off season, and it's that right now we do have one really good negotiating ploy. We could rip up that $9.5 million team option, give him a few extra million in that season and try to keep his – basically keep that contract down, because I think Burley's 26 years old right now. Is that correct?
He's right. I think he might be 27, but he's right around there. He's young nonetheless.
And this is a guy that could really emerge as a Hall of Fame pitcher. It's obviously still far too early to say that, but with the innings he pitches and the fact that he doesn't seem to put much stress on his arm,
the longevity of his career is going to be big. That's going to be
See him being, you know, a Glavine or a Maddux and really having that great long career. And I don't want to see this turn into a, you know, Greg Maddux situation where he leaves us and just goes on to win a few Cy Youngs somewhere else.
He is 27 years old, by the way. He turned it last
March 23rd.
Yeah.
And this is a guy that's already won himself. Entering this season, he had won 85 games. And he's got a career ERA in the mid-threes. And he's got the third-best earned run average right now. And if he became a free agent today, he'd probably get a $15 million a year contract.
Yeah. He would.
Could we maybe rip up his extension right now and offer him a 5-year deal at $13 million a season? Would that maybe be a wise move before letting it go another 2 seasons or a season and a half when we negotiate him, and the market price could then be $17 million? With all that Mark Burley has done and all the consistency he's thrown with, I think if there's any guy you're going to take a chance on giving him a long-term deal now, it would in fact be Burley. I would keep his pay for this year the same, and I'd rip up his option next year and extend him for 5 seasons.
You know, you swayed my opinion a little bit. If they were to do it, I think I really wouldn't have a problem with it. But personally, if I was in charge, I would just wait till the off season. That's just how, because I don't think really a contract extension, unless he's making a really, really low amount of money next year, because he's still $9.5 million is still a considerable amount of money. Unless he's making $5-6 million, like I said, then I think you could do something. But for now, I would let the off season go, give him the extension, and then if you want to work on, I mean, take the option on him for 2007, and then if you want to look past it, you start negotiating. Now, you want to keep on going on this? Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that I actually agree with you. We could wait for this into the off season and negotiate it. And just rip up his option after we exercise it in a sense and give him that, you know, extra money and still give him that same type of 5-year $13 million deal that would start next season.
Yeah.
So instead of making $9.5 million next season, he'd basically make $3.5 to $4 more million in 2006, and then we'd have him locked up for the next, you know, 4 years after that fact.
Yeah. Because I mean, and really, let's say next week they start talking about a contract extension and they don't agree on sides.
Could have a whole controversy throughout the season, you know, so what I started thinking about.
Yeah, you don't want to.
You don't want to deal with that. Yeah, I completely agree with you.
Burley
has shown he's an ace. He did it against Santana, beating who I think is the best pitcher in baseball, or at least one of the best three.
When he's on, yeah.
Yeah.
In the second half.
What was even more impressive to me was Sunday's start by Jose Contreras, because we've talked about in the past how he needed to develop into an ace and prove that he could pitch when he doesn't have his A game.
And he's done it twice this year.
Yeah, Sunday, you could see he wasn't fooling guys, but he still pitched. He didn't have his command that he wanted. He had a good-looking fastball, but he didn't have really good command of his breaking balls. He wasn't throwing many of them, yet he gives up 2 runs in 8 innings. And he's got the best ERA in the American League.
Yeah, and
this guy, I'm telling you, that extension Ken Williams signed him to, bargain.
You know what, and I made this clear in the show, you know, when they signed Contreras, when they signed Garland, I didn't really like giving both of them those big contracts, because even though I like both of those guys, I think there was that's a big risk you take, because one of those guys could have fell off, and Contreras so far is showing that it looks like he's legit. And not to say, you know, this early part of the season is going to determine how he's going to pitch the rest of the year, but based on what he did last year, based on how he's pitching when he doesn't have his stuff, he as you were saying before the show, he might be coming an ace.
Yeah, I really think we're seeing Jose Contreras emerge as not just a good pitcher with great stuff that can every once in a while shut you down. He's emerging as that guy who's going to almost always consistently shut you down for maybe 3 runs in 7 innings, but then 2 out of every 5 starts or every 6 starts, he's going to just flat out shut you out and throw a complete game. He just won his 11th in a row regular season, and that's going back to last year. And this guy is, right now, with this three starts, you know, four starts into it, he's front runner for Cy Young, and our duo of Burley
has to be, has to be
right
be
there
one
with
of the best
Beckett
in
and Schilling. And as much as I made fun of the whole Beckett and Schilling thing, it's kind of funny that right now in the American League, Burley and Contreras are 1-3, with Contreras being the league leader, and then you have Schilling and Beckett at 2-4. So those are two impressive duos, and those are going to be the two teams to me that stand out in the American League. The only thing is, when it comes to the Red Sox duo, you do have some injury issues that have been going on.
And question marks after.
Exactly. But those are right now the two teams that are in that upper echelon of the American League. But it's a very long season in baseball, and a lot of teams can emerge from this. Injuries can happen, and the Sox, either Sox team could, you know, deflate from this.
Yeah.
And we're going to take a quick break.
Well, I was waiting for you to say that.
Yeah, we've done some talking. Mario's even went on a rant. Usually that's reserved for me.
I'm exhausted.
And then we're going to come back. Then we're going to come back from the break, talk a little bit about Scotty Bocinic. I'm going to say to Mario, I was right. Ah!
We'll be right back.
Want your baseball fix on demand?
I want that!
Plug into the hottest big league talk radio on the web, Outsider Radio.
Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then again the following Sunday night. That will be the program.
Join host Brandon Rossage as things get loud.
Should Bud Selig suspend Barry Bonds? Everybody else is saying they should throw caution to the wind and just forget about it and make a statement. I don't think you should do that, and I don't think it's necessary. With this media juggernaut, Barry Bonds is going to get what's coming to him. Bud Selig can spare everybody some time and let the thing take its course. This thing, if this is true, it's the end of his career.
It's original grassroots baseball analysis ready for your ears on your time every single day.
We're going to get into the first pitch now, wrap up some of yesterday's action, and get into today's action. It's five topics in 5 minutes. Basically, the scoreboard coming right at you.
Don't miss a pitch. Get interactive and get plugged into Outsider Radio on the web's premier sports podcast network, 360thepitch.com.
Welcome back to Sox Talk on the Air, the official podcast of SoxTalk.com. I'm Jason Gage. Across all the way in Illinois, Chicago, Illinois, Mario Scalise.
We're just doing this so if we want to flip the segments, we could do that.
Yeah, plus I want to do an introduction. You never let me, so screw it. I'm just going to go like randomly at times, just introduce the show again. But since we had such a serious first half, and it was a pretty good segment, if I do say so myself.
Yes.
We're going to start this topic off. I happen to flip open the paper, and what do I see? This date in history. Today, 1901, Chicago defeated Cleveland 8-2 in the first American League game ever. So we not only were we great then in 1901, we are great today. We have a history of winning on the south side of Chicago, a long history that was continued last season and will be continued again this season when we repeat. But now that I've done my cheesy little this date in history, I'm going to do some quick shout-outs out to some websites. We talked a bit about the Minnesota Twins. I want to tell you a little bit about a Minnesota Twins podcast that somehow we inspired people, Mario. Did you know that?
We inspire people.
Oh, yeah. On this show, we motivate people.
I want to hear this.
But Jeffrey Straub, you may recall we had an email a while back, and it took me literally an hour to find the email.
Ah, yes, I do.
Well, that was Jeffrey Straub, and he enjoyed our show so much that he made a Minnesota Twins podcast, and I checked it out actually as I was driving to work this morning before doing the podcast, and it was a pretty cool show. They were talking a bit about the Twin Stadium deal, hence how I was able to talk about that in our first segment. And if any one of you that happens to be listening is just a generic baseball fan and likes listening to some, you know, baseball podcasts, or happens to be a Twins fan, check them out. It's mntwincast.com, www.mntwincast.com.
Okay.
And he does two shows a week. He does like a Monday show and a Friday show, and they're 40 minutes each, kind of recapping each series. And obviously he's more dedicated than us, and I'm sure his ratings are going to blow past us since, well,
stuff like that.
Lazy. We just do one show a week.
But stuff like that's always good to know, because you could always get a different perspective, especially, you know, when you're talking about the Twins. And or if you're thinking about the Twins, you get a different perspective from a Twins fan. Even if you're just in general baseball, you know, if they're going up against, you know, the Orioles or something, or the Yankees, you know, you get a different perspective. So,
yeah, oh yeah, it's always
to know.
good to listen to, and I'm gonna see. Maybe we can get him on next time we play the Twins as a guest, kind of giving us a perspective of how the Twins been playing recently. You know what their keys are to the whole series. Maybe we can get some strategy involved
maybe
in our show.
Maybe.
Now what the hell is
Scott?
Oh.
Podsednik. We're gonna get into the offense. Talk a little bit about their just streaks and the pitching, but Scott Podsednik, you were right.
Ooh, I love those words.
But not totally right. I think you said 300, right? You said he's gonna bat 300.
I said he was gonna bat over 300.
Okay, and 333.
I left myself a nice little mark.
And roughly 333 is over 300 because he went. What did he do? Nine
for 27, and he's got an 8-game hitting streak.
8-game hitting streak. This goes back to Monday, which is when we did the show last Monday. You know, we were talking about it in that show. Looked like he was coming back. I didn't think he was going to do this good. I was thinking more of like a 5-for-20 week where he was going to slowly make progress, have some hard hit balls that were still going to get caught. But like I said, he went 9-for-27, had 4 doubles, even though he got thrown out 3 times on the bases, which really is kind of discouraging. He had 4 doubles, which is kind of rare for him. Overall, a very good week for Podsednik.
Yeah, and a great week for the top of the order. Tadahito Gucci did a good job.
Yeah.
Jim Tomei set the record to open the season with consecutive runs scored, and that streak was stopped on Sunday.
Yes.
But the Sox won, so I'm sure he's not going to, you know, cry about that. And I just want to say it again. I was right. God, those words sound good. But not only that,
I just realized I was wrong. I don't know why. I like 3 times so far this show, I think I mentioned the Sox being 12-5. They were 13-5, which is horrible on my part. But go on with your thing. I was just looking at the standings. I didn't realize that.
You just wanted to see if you could get me off my little...
No, you know what? Because I was doing math in my head, and I realized that if Tomei's streak stopped at 17 games, that means that the Sox, if they have 5 losses, would have to have 13 wins.
And speaking of the math in your head, didn't you say 9-27 was going to be under 300 for you?
Hmm? No. See, I was kidding.
Yeah, sure you were. Maybe we should get serious again here. Yeah, Podsednik had a tremendous week. Our top of the order did good. And right now, the only really weaknesses you can see on this team are center field and Brian Anderson. But he's played tremendous defense. Actually, as much as I've touted him as a good defensive player, I've even been impressed with how well he's responded to playing in U.S. Cellular Field already. Because
you know, he said a couple times where I know balls hit in front of him, he kind of had a little bit of slight hesitancy, but really he has not been a liability by any means, and he's been a solid. And I said this before, he's not too far away from Rowan. When Rowan came up, Rowan was in this great center fielder. He worked his way into one, and Anderson, he looks like he might be on that same path.
Anderson's at this stage better defensively than Rowan was at his stage, you know, at the beginning of his career.
Yes.
They're similar hitters, neither of them being any good at the major league level. Well, I just tell it like it is. And Brian Anderson had a great game yesterday. He had a duck snort of it, just a swinging bunt that everyone's, you know, all wet about right now today because that counted as a hit and gave him a multi-hit game. And while that was great on the stats, and I know he'd take it, and hell, I'll take that hit any day of the week myself, but he hit a bomb to center field, and it was a missile. It was about his best swing he's had all season, and maybe he's going to be able to build some confidence off this and start to improve offensively, because that's going to be the necessity for him. But the nice part about the White Sox is we are such a good team that we can allow and let him develop in that 9 spot.
Yeah.
And let him play pretty much every day and go through the motions and just learn to make improvements offensively because he's so good out there defensively. He helps our pitching staff out there defensively.
And it's before and after Anderson. When you look at Uribe, Anderson, and Podsednik, who are batting back-to-back-to-back, you know, 8-9-1, they, for the most part, have been batting 100 to the low 200s all year, yet they've still been winning. And you know Uribe's going to pick it up.
He already did. Home runs carried us yesterday. And then Podsednik's picked it up. So now Anderson's going to be able to get... He's going to have a lot less pressure on his back because no longer is that back, you know, 8-9-1 type part of the lineup just, you know, a black hole, an automatic 1-2-3 inning. And with that, Anderson should see some better pitches because there'll be runners on base. You have to be dealing with stuff. And quite frankly, it's just a confidence factor with him.
You think it's more confidence than actual swing?
I think right now he's up there trying to do too much. He's trying to protect every part of the plate, and when you do that, you protect nothing, so to speak. Like, if you watch him, he's sitting there trying to just swing, you know, protect the pitch way outside. Then all of a sudden, the fastball comes outside, and since he's reaching outside now for these pitches, that fastball comes inside. He's got no chance at it, so he looks, and he goes down looking. So what he needs to do is just develop a better plan at the plate, and with that, you just got to be confident enough that your plan is going to work, and you don't get too concerned when a pitcher beats you in that plan. I mean, look at Barry Bonds. Is he concerned when he goes out and a pitcher makes three perfect pitches? He said no, because you know what? Maybe once every 2 weeks you're going to have a pitcher that makes three perfect pitches on you and gets you out.
That you have no chance on.
Yeah, and to that you tip your hat and you go back to the dugout. He beat you. I mean, that's going to happen. But what Anderson needs to do is come up with that type of plan and go up there looking for certain pitches in a certain area and just work with that and slowly build his confidence. And if a pitcher makes a few perfect pitches and gets you, you know what? Tip your cap, go back to the dugout, and go get him next time.
Yeah, and realize that you are batting ninth. And if a guy like Uribe gets hot, if a guy like Pizzini gets hot, and obviously the rest of the lineup is producing right now, nobody's really worrying about you. He's more or less, he could almost be treated like a pitcher in the National League, where they're not going to be studying you to the point where they're going to be saying, okay, we have to throw him here. So he's going to have some better pitches to hit, I would think.
Oh, I definitely think so, and I think we're going to slowly see him improve. I'm not calling for him to hit 300 this week because it's not going to happen. But I do one thing totally separate now.
Maybe last year's little game in Seattle, maybe that's a sign of things to come with his performances in Seattle.
Maybe. Yeah, against Felix Hernandez?
Maybe.
His two home runs? Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think he's going to have a career where he's
hitting
two home runs
every game. Maybe he's a West Coast hitter. Who knows?
It could be. But the thing that most impresses me about Brian Anderson has actually been at the plate. You don't see him pouting. You don't see all these outs really affecting him. And for most young players, if you came up and struggled the way he did, they'd be like sobbing. You know, you could really see it in them. And he still seems, you know, confident.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're obviously going to see some frustration on him. But like we were saying before, defensively, it's obviously not carrying over. So he's going out in center field, and he's still playing a good defense. So I think that's always a sign. Whenever you see a player who's struggling offensively but still doing the job defensively, that shows that mentally he still has his head on, and he's not going crazy.
Yeah, you love to see that out of a young player, and it's why I think he will develop into a Torrey Hunter, a 270 hitter, 20 to 30 home runs, 20 to 30 stolen bases,
and, you know what,
and I think very good defense.
And I think that's a great, great complimentary player to have on a team.
He won't be your star.
No.
But you could stick him in your 5 or 6 spot in the lineup.
I would go lower.
Let him go out there and play center field. Probably 6 spots better. And I'm talking 3 years from now because he's not going to be Torrey Hunter this season, obviously. But I think the future is bright for Brian Anderson, and I've been one of his biggest detractors over the years between my writings at Future Sox, where everyone else raved about him and how major league ready he was, and there was me sitting there saying he is going to have his adjustment period. He's going to struggle because his swing just isn't as pretty and his approach isn't quite there yet. But we have a good hitting coach in Greg Walker, despite, you know, what everyone thinks. And I think we're going to see him make the adjustments the course of a season.
And I think it's key. I'm sure some people have been thinking, you know, should they bring him to send him to AAA? And I think that shouldn't even be an option, because I think him going to AAA, I think all that would happen is he would just hit like he normally did in the minor leagues. He would come back up, and he would still have to make those adjustments. I think the key is for him to stay up here and make the adjustments at the major league level.
I completely agree. I mean, just look at a guy like Jeff Francoeur in Atlanta. This season, he's really struggling.
He's yet to walk.
Yeah, and he has no idea. He's such a talented player, but they are gonna. He's not gonna learn how to walk down AAA. He's gonna have to learn how to take pitches and have better at bats at the major league level.
Yeah,
because down in AAA, you don't have to work a great at bat.
Some guys just have that AAA swing already there, and they need to adjust and make it into a major league swing. And you're not gonna do it in AAA for some guys.
Yeah.
Now you're having some high hopes for Brian Anderson. One guy that you were doubting. Has some doubts for his Cliff Bleat. But that's changing?
It's starting to. I was mainly concerned about Bleat because I think Bleat's command will improve. But when a guy's all of a sudden lost 5 to 6 miles an hour on his fastball, I have reason to be concerned. And I'm not one of those type of fans or analysts that believe you have to throw 97 mile an hour to be successful. Because my two favorite pitchers in baseball, two of my three favorite pitchers to watch, Mark Burley, Greg Maddux, Pedro Martinez. Two of the three are pitchers. And Pedro Martinez is a pitcher who happens to throw gas.
But in certain cases, a guy like Polite, he does have to throw pretty hard. He doesn't have to throw 97, but he's got to throw 90, 91.
Yeah, and he was, you know, kind of doing that. But now, in Sunday's game, he gave up a run. He gave up two hits to start things off. But his velocity's back, and I could see him getting a little more confidence back. And I think we're going to see Polite work out of this rut. But as much as I want to talk about our bullpen and Cliff Polite, I think we have a bigger issue in a sense. And that's the fact that these guys have not been able to get worked into a groove, so to speak, especially Neil Kotz and Cliff Polite. Polite last pitched, I think, April 17th or April 18th, so he had basically five to six days off before making his appearance Sunday, and it's hard to get yourself in a rhythm when you're not pitching at all. And that's going to become a growing concern, I guess, with our pen, because our starting rotation is so good. So, I mean, it's a nice benefit to have in a sense, and our bullpen's going to be rested. And our pitchers are working deep without throwing high pitch counts because Ozzie is going to be very careful with that.
Yes.
But I'd like to be able to see Polite throw, you know, maybe 2 weeks straight, be able to throw 2 out of every 4 days. And well, Neil Kotz, you know, be able to throw 2 out of every 4 days. Bobby Jenks and McCarthy to, you know, get some action.
You look in the bullpen, and really McCarthy's been great. You know, and Jenks has really held his own. The rest of it, a lot of question marks. With them being 13-5, and their offense being in a roll, and their starters doing good, do you think maybe a couple times over these next few weeks they should have these days where saying, listen, we're going to pull the starter after the 5th, 6th innings for the simple fact of getting the bullpen work, and if the bullpen comes in and gets knocked around, so be it. It's going to be good for the long haul.
I don't think we should be going to that step, but I do think if because I don't ever think we should do things for the course of winning for not winning a game, but I do think in the you know, after 7 innings, if we have a decent sized lead, instead of letting our pitcher who maybe only has 90 pitches or 85 pitches go out for that 8th inning, if Polite and Kotz and mainly Polite and Kotz have not pitched, because those are our guys that we're going to have to get there, because there are going to be points in the season where our starting rotation is going to have, you know, hit a little rut and maybe struggles, or we may have someone go down and our bullpen will have to step it up. And we got to make sure our guys are prepared to do that when that time comes.
Yeah.
So in the 8th inning, just turn it over to Polite and Kotz and maybe give Jenks a day off. The next game, the 8th inning, give McCarthy and Jenks an inning.
I guess where I'm coming from is a lot of times, and you more or less see this with relievers, you might have a guy who is clearly a key to your team succeeding. And in the bullpen, you may not have many choices after him. So the guy might be struggling, and I know people may not want that guy to come out in a big situation, but nonetheless, you eventually are going to need that guy to learn how to figure it out. So that's kind of where I'm getting at, where, yeah, these guys in the bullpen, they may be struggling, and yeah, by putting them in today, they might cost you a game, but by not using them at all, or using them using them very little, you might hurt yourself come August, come September. So that's kind of saying, if you maybe risk a couple games now for the simple fact of getting these guys extra work in.
I think these type of things tend to work themselves out. There's going to be a spot where we wish our starters could go, you know, 7 or 8 innings.
And, yeah, you're probably right.
And our bullpen has been burned, so I'm not too concerned about that.
Just let it come, more or less.
One plus side is we talked all about Boone Logan and Matt Thornton and the type of effect they would have on our bullpen and how weak it was. But with our starting pitching starting to step up and hopefully pitch like this for most of the season, not as ridiculously as they did this past week, but I'm talking going 7 innings, consistent bases. Yeah. With a 3.5, you know, to 4 ERA as a team out of your rotation. And basically put, then all you have to do is rely on Polite, Kotz, Jenks, and McCarthy. And with time, Polite's not going to be as great as he was last year, but he's going to be good again. I saw his fastball back, and I'm confident he's going to be, his command is going to come back now that he's got a little bit more confidence in his fastball. And he's not going to have to aim the pitch and be so concerned about his where the ball is going.
Yeah.
And then Neil Kotz, he's had a little bit of a rut, but he's still got that same arm, and there's no way he's not going to be very good.
He seems to me like he's too good of a pitcher. It seems to me where he's working in more off-speed pitches. I don't know, maybe if it's just me, maybe I'm seeing something different. Have you seen this where it looks like he's throwing a little bit more off-speed?
He's definitely doing that, and I think it's one of those things that could actually help him in the long run because he's kind of building that.
Yeah.
But he's going to go back to his bread and butter, his fastball. No one can touch it. But as he mixes it in and hitters get more used to expecting a breaking pitch, it's going to make that fastball that much better.
Yeah.
And for the long run of his development, I think it's really going to be a useful tool. And as I've said, if anything happens, Neil Kotz is the guy I point to as our closer because he has that seems like a seemingly rubber arm, and he gets a lot of strikeouts, and opponents don't really hit him for a high average. He's a very good pitcher, and I like the fact that it looks like we could really survive with a four-man bullpen. But the only thing that hurts is you have Boone Logan and Matt Thornton. Thornton, who has a great arm, and really could turn into a real big, you know, a kind of a diamond in the rough, so to speak, if Cooper can work his magic. But it's hard to get those two tight, Logan and Thornton, any innings to where they could really develop. And you can't release Thornton because he's on waivers. You can't send him down to AAA because he won't clear waivers. And then Logan, it's hard to just carry one less reliever. But with him not pitching, I would think you'd be better off sending him to AAA and getting his act together in a sense. And then having him ready so we can pull him up if we need to, well, and maybe just bring a veteran reliever up like Tim Redding.
Two thoughts. I think it goes back to what you were just saying before, where you just have to let the season unfold. And I think as the season unfolds, the relievers are going to get more working. But as far as Boone Logan, and I said this before the season, with him coming from single A and him really not being a prospect at all, I think by just sending him down, I think that'll be the last you see of him. I think you have to keep him up here and just try to find to get more work into him. Just try to get him more innings somehow. And I think that would be the way to go. I think sending him to the minor leagues, I don't know if that would actually do much for him.
Yeah. I mean, you could very well be correct, and this would be the last we'd ever see of Logan. He's one of those guys that, you know, comes up, has a great spring, and then kind of disappears into the sunset.
Yeah, I think you got to keep him up here and give him some consistent work. Like you're saying with Polite, you know, for 2 weeks you want to see Polite get a couple innings in. Well, maybe, you know, for a week or two, do the same for Boone Logan. See how if he's going in there and he starts getting rocked, or if he just has no control, then you can react to it because you obviously need people up in the bullpen who are going to get outs. But
the problem with this and with that plan is we already need to find innings for Polite and Kotz.
Yeah.
And they will find themselves in time, you can't just start giving to Logan when you have Polite and Kotz there. Because
yeah.
Polite and Kotz are going to be – if we get those guys turned around with McCarthy and Jenks going, we are going to be in very good shape with that four-man bullpen, especially when it comes to the postseason.
Mm-hmm.
If we get there where you are going to have all those days off that you can use your relievers pretty much every day, so to speak, every game. That you're not going to have to, well, you assume you're not going to have to use a guy like Thornton and Logan. And if you do,
then
it means
your guy
got shelled.
You have the rotation in front of him.
Exactly.
Now, we talked about the Indians. We actually didn't talk about them at all. They're 2-4. They're 2-4 in the last six games.
Lost two to Baltimore, and they lost two to the Kansas City Royals. And their pitching staff, as brutal as the Twins pitching has been, and I realized that ERA-wise, the Indians team's ERA isn't as bad. It's 5.53. But right now, Jason Johnson is their ace.
Mm-hmm.
If I was an Indian fan, I'd be a little nervous. I realize Baltimore has a good offense, so to give up runs to Baltimore isn't the worst thing in the world. But they gave up 18 in one game. They've now given up nine runs. Mario looked this up.
In six games. What is it? April 24th, and they've already had six games where they've given up nine or more runs. And like you said, the 18-run game, that's discouraging if you're an Indians fan.
Yeah, because this was a team that supposedly was supposed to have good pitching, and it doesn't. I like Cliff Lee, Jake Westbrook, solid. CC Sabathia is never healthy, and the rest of that rotation, although Jason Johnson has pitched very well, is not very impressive, and their bullpen has struggled. Like I said it would, because they lost Bobby Harry, they lost David Riske.
And if guys like Paul Bird are going to get knocked around for three innings, and Westbrook, as good as he is, he has those games where he gets knocked around in two innings. The more that happens, the more that bullpen gets worked, and who knows.
The more pressure it puts on your offense, and when your offense has that kind of pressure,
yes,
it makes it harder to score in a sense.
Especially when you have, I mean, they're not incredibly young, but they're still a rather young offense when you have guys like Hafner and Martinez and Sizemore really being the keys to it. Now, I kind of skipped the subject. Not really, because we're going to talk about the upcoming week. The Sox are going to Seattle. They're going to Anaheim.
Oh, I cannot wait.
Despite them winning 99 games last year and winning the World Series, during the regular season they were still 7-12 on the West Coast.
Does the West Coast slump still exist? I say no.
You think it's done?
It is over with. We ended it in the American League ALCS when we swept in 3 games in Anaheim to put us over, win the pennant, go to the World Series. I was there. I was sitting in my seat in the upper deck, misty-eyed and all, when they got that final out. There's no way. When I'm watching those games in Anaheim, we were taking 2 out of 3. That Angels team is not good. Seattle, on the other hand, has some good pitching. If their offense somehow got hot, I could see Seattle maybe taking 2 out of 3 from us, but it's not going to be Anaheim doing so. And I do still like our odds of actually going 500 or better on this little short 6-game West Coast trip. Yeah,
they play Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. They have off Thursday. Then they play Anaheim over the weekend, Saturday, Sunday. Then they go into Cleveland. We're going to talk about the 2-game Indian series next week. But yeah, if they could go 3-for-3,
I think that's a win. On the road, you especially, play 500 ball in a place where we don't play well.
They're currently on an 8-game winning streak, so they're going to lose eventually. I mean, you can't go out there, and it's very rare to win 10, 11, 12 games in a row, so they're going to be losing, you know, a couple games, you know, over the next couple weeks. And, you know, going 3-for-3 in the West Coast trip, I think would be a success.
Oh, no doubt about it. And Anaheim has had our number for a number of years. But like I said, I think we got to them finally. But it is going to be a good series because Anaheim doesn't get beat. They're just like the Twins, and they're just like the White Sox, where
they're
gonna they won't
there.
Do the little things that make them lose, so to speak. So they're going to be in position to do the little things to win, if that made any sense.
No. I think it did. I understand you, and I think that's very important.
As long as someone understands me, I'm happy.
Now, you know, we're really not going to try to get into off-sock stuff too much, but good story
Something
nonetheless.
Something funny happened.
Keith Hernandez. I'm sure you must have heard about it. He's the announcer for the Mets.
Yep, New York
and
Mets.
And they were playing the Padres, and they look at the dugout. I don't know who was going to the dugout being congratulated by all the players and coaches, but there was a little woman, a lady.
Let me give you his quote. I got the paper in front of me. I got some of his quotes here. Who is the girl in the dugout with the long hair? Hernandez said during the broadcast. What's going on here? You've got to be kidding me. Only player personnel in the dugout. He also went on to say that, I'm not saying a woman belongs in the kitchen, but they don't belong in the dugout.
He then tried to make it into seem like a joke, but if you listen to the audio, it didn't seem like he was joking when he said it. Not to say he was outraged, but he was still kind of like, what?
He was dead serious when he said
it. Yeah, it sounded like
he pretty much slammed the fact that the Padres had a girl, oh my God, in the clubhouse. Not the clubhouse, but in the dugout.
Yeah,
and she happens to be the trainer, the massage therapist for the team.
Something like that.
Yeah. And totally a classless move by Keith Hernandez. And I hope the New York Mets come down on him for that, because there's no reason to, you know, put something like that, because anyone that listens to that all of a sudden seems to think that it's wrong to be a woman in baseball. And I happen to know that the Dodgers organization had a woman. Actually, she came from the Chicago White Sox organization, I think. It was like a Vietnamese gal that's supposed to be, it's Thung Nhau or something is her name.
Yes.
And she's supposed to be one of the top minds in all baseball, and she's going to be like one of those next people that could possibly become the first female GM in the game. But the Keith Hernandez thing, just listening to it, I loved his commentator, his partner in the booth, sitting there going, just pretty much going, what are you saying? Keith Hernandez even said something like, I probably shouldn't say this, and the commentator's
like,
of course you shouldn't say this. You know you're going to be regretting this. You're going to be paying for this, and he deserves to be fined. I mean, it's just an idiotic comment, and I'm not one that really looks at comments. And then we had more idiotic comments over the weekend, because you had Bean Brawl between Omar Vizquel and Jose Mesa. That's just great. Jose Mesa has said any time that he faces Omar Vizquel, he will try to kill him. with the baseball. He will try to beat him, and if Vizquel charges the mound, he will kill him. Kill. Is he the Mike Tyson of baseball? I always thought that belonged to Julian Tavares. He's always starting crap.
If you're the manager of the Rockies, do you want to send him out to face an Omar Vizquel, knowing that all he's going to do is just try to hit him?
Yes.
Especially
you know
if
why?
You're trying to win the game.
You know why? It's the only thing exciting going on in Colorado. That brings stories. They should play the Giants every game, bring Mesa in, that way the fans will come like it's a hockey match.
I think they got about 14 or 15 games left against them, so they're going to have plenty of these games.
There could be a few more brawls.
What, are the Rockies going to have commercials for it? No, but the Rockies are 10-8. They're tied with the Giants. This division is pretty much weak overall.
It's a terrible division. But if Colorado wins the division, I don't know what I'll do. You can tell me whatever I have to do on the show. If I have to wear a rainbow shirt, so be it.
A rainbow shirt on radio.
I was going to say I'll eat my hat, but I don't want to have to actually eat a hat if I'm wrong.
Once again, eating a hat on the radio, it doesn't... there's no proof.
Yeah, well, there'll you be know, proof you, when you hear my throwing up on the background.
Well, no, you could do that if you could fake a throw up, but then you'd also have to take a picture of you with the shirt on and post it.
You could actually just make it
the banner on SockSock.com.
Sure. Make it more humiliating.
You know what?
We only have like 100 listeners on our podcast, but instead I got to show it to 13 million people SockSock.
No, this is what you brought it up. I didn't bring it up. So this is what we'll do. If the Colorado Rockies finish in first place, if they win the National League West, you will have to wear a rainbow shirt?
With rainbow suspenders.
Rainbow shirt, rainbow suspenders. Take a picture of it, and it must be included in the banner on top of Sox Talk for like one day or something.
Hey, and I'm willing to roll.
You're agreeing, okay.
I agree. It's not going to happen, so I'm pretty confident in that. And with... does baseball... speaking of... Should I be like going over to this? I don't even know where I can buy a rainbow shirt. So you're gonna have to point me in that direction, Mario.
Oh.
I think you got more experience in that regards.
Just go to San Francisco.
And should I ask Julian Tavares where to shop?
What do you know? Something I don't know.
No, Julian Tavares, when he was traded to the Giants, he made a comment something along the lines of San Francisco, just about how he didn't want to be there because of all the gay people that live there.
Are you serious?
And yeah, he's quite the outspoken guy, so to speak. He didn't want to live with them. He didn't want them cheering him on. We should reiterate, we have no opinion on the subject. We're just saying
I'm just joking. I'm joking.
We're not a discriminatory program. We discriminate nothing but ourselves. Nope. Because we always call each other idiots.
That's why we're trying to get interviews, so we could interview minorities.
Exactly. We should have Ozzy on.
Yeah, that won't happen.
Nah. We're world class. But back to the whole Jose Mesa thing. This is really interesting. What the hell is baseball doing? They're busy suspending guys for throwing a ball, just defending their team and their players, yet Jose Mesa gets nothing? This guy's done it three times. Three times Omar Vizquel's been up, and he's gotten beaned three times.
And he's going to be beaned the fourth time, and the fifth time, and the sixth time, as long as he has the opportunity to.
They better, every time Jose Mesa goes to the mound and he's facing Omar Vizquel, they ought to have like a prison guard search Vizquel and make sure he doesn't have a shank there that he's going to shank Vizquel when he charges the mound. You just never know.
They have to. If he said it, I think if a pitcher ever says, I'm going to hit him anytime I see him, I think that should be an automatic suspension. I think in Mesa's case, it should be probably a 10-15 game suspension. And if he does it again, and you know it's purposely, here's the thing. He might face Vizquel again. He might not have any intention to do it, and he might hit him, and that'll suck because, then he could go out there and get in serious trouble when he didn't really mean to do it. But he still brought it upon himself nonetheless.
Yeah,
he
put himself in that situation.
Yeah, if he does it, I mean, you got to say you're done for a very long time, which could ruin the Rockies' playoff hopes. And you'll love it because then you wouldn't have to wear the rainbow shirt. What? We're done.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, we were going to talk about Verlander and Felix Hernandez and how great of a game that was on Sunday. But you know what? I'm ending on that.
Too tired.
It's been a long show. It's been a great show. Send us any feedback at contact@futuresox.com.
Can we get our own? Let's get a different email address.
What do you want the email address to be? SoxTalkOnTheAir@SoxTalk.com or something?
That'll work.
All right. I'll see what I can do. And thank you for listening. Make sure to check out the rest of our Talk Chicago Sports Network sites. Obviously, SoxTalk.com. You're listening to us via SoxTalk.com. We're also listed now in iTunes.
Ooh.
On the podcast section. Yeah, I got off my button. They listed us. We're on Yahoo Podcast, Podcast Pickle, and about a number of other sites that I don't know the names to.
Directories, yes.
Yes.
Now, and don't forget, there's also BullsTalk.com, which you should be going to because it's the playoffs. What?
There's Talk no, Bulls. Bulls. Talk yes, Bulls. It's TalkBulls.com. No. It is fascinating right now.
That is why you should be doing that.
The Bulls were jobs.
Yes.
Stupid free throws.
Go to TalkBulls.com to talk about the Bulls in the playoffs, and if you want.
The NFL draft is coming up this weekend, so check out TalkBears.com. Who knows? You may even get about a 5-minute rant on from me on Monday when we do our next show talking about the Chicago Bears, because I know you all care.
So you just stay tuned until Monday. We'll be back. We'll be talking about the Indian series. We'll be talking about the Sox going 3-3 in the West Coast road trip. Till next week, see ya.